To shoot. Crossover. Up, under, and in! 1.1 left! Houston and the Cougars with 33 wins and a number 3 seed are coming out of Tulsa, and they are heading to Kansas City in the Sweet 16.
The Houston Cougars are moving on to the Elite Eight.
The dream is alive for Houston. For the first time in 37 years, the Cougars are going to the Final Four.
Woo! Welcome to the Scott Holman Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finally reached it here, March 12th. March Madness. It has not been good at this point because we have not played a March Madness game. We have not played an NCAA men's basketball tournament game at this point, Dustin, but it truly feels like once that CBS college basketball music starts, once the Selection Sunday show comes on about 5 Central, 3 where I am right now, it really feels well and truly like we're beginning the best sports season of the year. And we always say this, but you and I think, well predating the time of U of H being one of the better teams in these events year in, year out, have always been big weirdos for March Madness. The craziness, the excitement, the every unique thing about this sporting event that I don't think any other American or otherwise can replicate, we've enjoyed it. It just feels like a 5-year treat that we've gotten to enjoy this event, which we've always enjoyed, even when U of H's participants in it was strictly coincidental and quite rare. It doesn't ever get old. It feels like what I'm told waking up on Christmas Day early and seeing the presents is like to see that bracket, to see Houston with the little one tick next to it this year. Also cool, even though now we know there are several tough games, hopefully awaiting this team. Dustin, I am rambling because I could just extemporaneously speak for the next 30 minutes about the things I like about March Madness, but I'm mercifully joined by you, somebody who's going to join me for this little instant react podcast, talk about what the Houston Cougars' first weekend of NCAA tournament basketball looks like. So how you feeling right now, buddy, about an hour out of finding out where the Cougars would be going here for March Madness?
Yeah, I'm pretty damn excited. We didn't really have a whole lot of doubt heading into this week that Houston was going to end up getting one of the number one seeds in the NCAA tournament. Ended up getting named the number 2 overall seed. Not that that means diddly squat, really. But very excited.
Don't tell Seth Davis that. Don't tell Seth Davis that. He was heated during the Midwest bracket announcement. Sorry.
And then as soon as I got the chair of the committee, he was like, hold on, let me ask you about this. He's the number 2 overall seed over Kansas stuff. Like, good grief, man. Just a little bit ridiculous. But, and again, who cares? It's the second time in school history that Houston has gotten the number 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. Notably, you know, they didn't have seeds back in the 60s, or likely I think Elvin Hayes would have probably gotten the Cougs to maybe a number 1 seed at some point there as well. But either way, Houston gets the number 1 seed in the Midwest region. Like we said, number 2 overall seed according to the selection committee, facing Northern Kentucky in the opening round of the NCAA tournament on Thursday. Should they win that one, they would get the winner of Auburn and Iowa in the second round. And, you know, weirdly enough, for talking about, oh yeah, the number 2 overall seed, they got Seth Davis all crying about it. Houston got what is clearly the toughest 16 seed in the first round. And then they're in a region with a red hot UT Austin team that looks like one of the scariest 2 seeds in the tournament. I would have much rather been paired with UCLA or Marquette, someone like that. And then Houston could very well potentially be playing a true road game in the second round should Houston and Auburn win. They would be playing in Birmingham, Alabama against a team from Alabama. I'm not sure the selection committee really did Houston any favors, despite the whole number 2 overall seed talk discussion.
Yeah, I'm going to quickly make myself a giant hypocrite for making fun of all those Arizona fans being mad about U of H being in the Sweet 16 in San Antonio last year. But I guess we should start, Dustin, with the first team that we're going to see, hopefully a team in a game that will be one that we don't think very much about in the long term, in the form of the Northern Kentucky Norsemen here in the first round. You want to start with talking about the Norse system?
Yeah, let's start talking about the Norse. They've only been a Division I team since the 2012-2013 season, and you know that you probably know by now that they have that 4-year waiting period. But so they haven't been eligible for the tournament for very long, but they are already making their third NCAA tournament appearance. Still looking for their first NCAA tournament win. They're making now their first appearance since the departure of John Brannan, who you may remember took the Cincinnati job and then got himself in a bunch of trouble and then quickly lost the Cincinnati job. So they're in year four under their new guy, whose name I didn't put in my notes for some reason, but making
Darren
their
Horn.
First tournament. There you go. For making their first tournament appearance under their new coach. Number 161 in KenPom. For comparison, if they were in the AAC, that would put them a little bit behind South Florida, a little bit ahead of ECU and SMU. And, you know, I think the thing that jumps out to me about them is that they're extremely guard-heavy offensively, which is not, you know, surprising or out of the ordinary when you see teams come from some of the smaller conferences in the country. But you look at them, all four of their top four scorers are 6'5 or shorter. Leading scorer is Marquez Warwick, has been scoring a ton of points for them over the past three seasons. Kind of cool that, you know, he's someone who scored just a ton of points the last 2 years, almost certainly could have transferred somewhere and probably gotten maybe to a bigger school. But sticking with the Norse, now in his third year there, averaging over 19 points per game this year, someone who can score at all three levels, can make the three, can get to the lane, can get fouled, and can get to the, and make some free throws once he gets to the line there. So, you know, aside from Warwick, though, they don't get into the lane too much. They shoot pretty poorly on two-point shots as a team. They rarely does anyone there really draw fouls outside of Warwick. So it's a matchup that scares you a little bit in that sense, because, you know, how many times have we seen in the NCAA tournament since, you know, time immemorial, some team that shoots a bunch of threes just gets red hot in a game and pulls an upset. So certainly when you see a team that shoots a lot of threes that doesn't really want to get in the lane, that scares you a little bit. But, you know, on the other hand, I think that's still kind of more the offensive profile of a team that, for Houston's lineup specifically, I'd rather them face, as opposed to someone who maybe has a reliable big that can really change the game offensively. So interesting matchup, but definitely a big test for Houston's guards. You know, kind of a matchup that, with them being kind of very guard heavy, you wonder if maybe we'll see the occasional four guard lineup for the Cougs to match up in this one.
And they're a very, very active team defensively. Fourth in the country in steal percentage, 13th in opponent turnover percentage. I could say Sam Vinson, 6'5 sophomore guard for theirs, who's third team All Horizon, and senior Xavier Rhodes. Those guys are both top 30 nationally in steal percentage individually, which I think will test the Cougars there. We'll test Jamal Shea, who's been quite good there. But, you know, Trevon Faulkner, the Horizon Sixth Man of the Year. You mentioned Marcus Warwick, second team all conference, really good three level scorer. And I think kind of a cool story because he gets to go back to the dance and was a guy that I'm sure would have had no shortage of high major interest if he had decided to go out there and play for someone else. So cool to see guys stick around at mid majors and be those good third or fourth year players like Warwick. As a team, the Norse finished in a three way tie for second in the Horizon regular season standings. Like the Cougars, play the game at a very slow pace. They're 358th out of 363 teams in Division I in terms of pace. And like you say, very guard heavy. I will say one front court guy I will single out, 6'8 senior Chris Brandon, one of the better offensive and defensive rebounders in the country, top 25 right now in both offensive and defensive rebounding percentage. As a team, NKU is slightly above average at grabbing offensive boards, but I think what'll make this a really difficult matchup for them against the Cougars is they are pretty awful at conceding them, and I think that makes the never easy test of beating this Houston team that much more difficult if you're going in probably going to concede a fair amount of second chances. And I looked also at how NKU has done against similar-ish opponents. You will see when I get to the end of this list that I really stretch the ish on that. They do have a win over Cincy in the early season. That's a common opponent. It was a convincing win. It was a game I believe that actually got played at NKU's campus as a favor because of NKU hosting Cincy during their rebrand, kind of playing the TSU to Cincy's U of H there. Also, very, very close. If you're not familiar, Northern Kentucky is like literally their campus is like on the other side of the river from Cincinnati. It probably wouldn't even be like a Galleria to Northwest Houston drive to get from one campus to the other. They're very, very close. But again, back to what I was saying earlier, similar opponents. Northern Kentucky has struggled. They had pretty decisive losses to FAU, Kent State, Wazoo, and Toledo. You do have the one over Cincy, but again, a very early season win. I don't know if the Bearcats would would fare similarly if that game was played much later in the year. Mentioned also, Dustin, an idea coached by Darren Horn, has the Highlanders officially in the Field 68 for his first time since taking over as head coach there, though he had a good team in the season that got canceled because of COVID in 2020. Formerly at South Carolina and Western Kentucky, took Western Kentucky to the tournament, did about as well at South Carolina as anyone has done in the last 30 years. But I guess, you know, it's a good opponent. It's an opponent that's going to test you. I think one of the better 16 seeds out there. So I think you're going to get a tougher test than some of the other one seeds, but a game U of H should win and should win comfortably. And again, this isn't a Northern Kentucky team that's bad, but it's a Northern Kentucky team that hasn't really shown previously that they can hang with a team of U of H's caliber.
I was going to say, like you mentioned their second game of the year against a Division I opponent was the 13-point home win over Cincinnati, but every other, kind of like you alluded to, every other time they faced a top 100 team, they've gotten beaten pretty comfortably. So as much as it is, you know, like I said, I stand by, I think they're the best 16 seed easily. They're still a 16 seed for a reason. There's still a reason that only one 16 seed has ever won a game in the first round. And this is a game that, you know, if Houston has anything approaching its A or even its B game in the opening round, I don't think that this one's going to be too competitive down the stretch, especially with a team that, like you mentioned, gives up a ton of offensive rebounds and kind of like I alluded to, does not get to the line very often. We know those are kind of two of the ways to you know, the kind of the thing that you need to do to slow Houston down, and the way that you can kind of get at them is by, you know, not giving up offensive rebounds and then getting to the line. And it feels like the Norse are going to struggle with either or both of those two possibilities in the opening round. And then second round, Houston will, assuming they are able to beat Northern Kentucky, which, you know, again, the UMBCs are out there. You got to give the Norse some credit. So we'll make it a conditional. If Houston is able to win in the first round on Thursday, they would advance to Saturday to the second round to face the winner of the game between 8-seed Iowa and 9-seed Auburn. As we mentioned, the first two games were played in Birmingham. So Auburn pretty much as the 9-seed, the third best out of the four teams in that little region, will be playing de facto home game, as one would imagine, just down the road in Birmingham. Kelvin Sampson kind of sarcastically commenting that maybe Houston should have earned a 9-seed so they could have, you know, gotten their games just down the road. But regardless, you know, the Tigers, I think one of, you know, in addition to the fact that they are playing at home, they're one of the few teams, according to KenPom, that are actually slightly underseeded in Houston's region. A lot of those teams kind of overseeded, according to, if you believe KenPom. KenPom has them number 29, which would make them the top 8 seeds. So even then, they're, you know, very, very slightly underseeded, I would guess. But I think on the other hand, they're kind of an interesting test case, though, because they started the season 16-3. They've gone just 4-9 over their last 13 games, so not exactly charging headfirst into the NCAA postseason. But still, you know, really tough defensive team. You know, like Houston, one of the really hard teams in the country to make a shot against, but another team that surrenders a ton of offensive rebounds. So I think that's a potentially interesting X factor if Houston and Auburn do end up facing each other. But, you know, maybe this is karma for all the Arizona fans crying about how they had to play Houston in San Antonio in the Sweet 16 last year, because facing Auburn in Birmingham in the second round doesn't seem like the kind of matchup you're hoping for if you are a one seed.
Yeah, I guess I would say in this case, I guess to myself, to Sam, the co-host of this podcast, your team's the one seed. You should still be able to win this game, even though obviously not ideal to get Auburn in Birmingham, one of the, I would certainly guess, biggest population centers for that fan base and school's alumni. I think the fact that this Auburn team is a 9 seed, it's testament to obviously them being, I think, somewhat underseeded per KenPom, like you said, but a testament to that awful February and March they've had. I mean, they did end their regular season on a high note. They beat a good Tennessee team. So it's a team capable of doing good things, but that was also, that Tennessee win was their first win against a good SEC opponent in a good long while. A very good perimeter defensive team, top 30 defensive team on the whole, though. Like the Cougars, they send opponents to the foul line a fair amount. They concede lots of offensive rebounds. They're very hot and cold offensively, and I think the fact that maybe it's gone a bit more cold recently is why they're here. I mean, other than getting offensive boards and getting the free throw line, you look at what they've done for the entirety of the season, and there's not really much they've done very well, or at least done very efficiently. And you could go a long way being a team that gets offensive boards and gets to the free throw line. I mean, just a few years ago, this was a Cougar program that had some good efficient offenses, but was largely in the back of offensive rebounding more than the putting of the ball in the basket. Their two highest usage guards, this was interesting to me, Dustin. I think that's going to be a matchup to watch if and we see the Tigers in the round of 32. Wendell Green Jr. and KD Johnson are both listed at 6 foot or under. I think what scares me about the other opponent we're going to talk about here in a sec is that Iowa is a pretty long team. You've seen at times this year, teams with some length give the Cougars problems, and I don't know if that's the case with their backcourt, though. Johnny Broome, a frontcourt guy, certainly makes up for that. He's going to be a challenging matchup. High-level rebounder, both offensively and defensively. One of the best shot blockers in the country. Kind of not surprising he was a name that was probably semi-credibly linked to the Cougars this past offseason. He's a very good big man, a guy who certainly from his last year at Moorhead, I guess now a season ago, looked worthy of maybe finishing his career at a bigger conference school, but I think has been everything you probably would have hoped for and then some. A guy who certainly changes what you have to do offensively in the paint. I think my other thought on them is that they didn't seem like the deepest team. They don't have the biggest rotation. Maybe, I guess, that could explain somewhat why they had that 4-9 finish of the season and didn't look so good down the stretch after being pretty well entrenched in the top 25 for most of the first couple months of the season.
Yeah, I think they're an interesting matchup. You mentioned some of the shorter guards, but on the same hand, I think whether Houston gets Auburn, excuse me.
They don't like if you mix them up.
No one from either of those schools will get upset if we mix them up, I'm sure. They're a team from Alabama, which was my whole point that I was complaining about earlier about playing them in Birmingham. That's going to be my excuse here. But whether Houston gets Auburn or Iowa in the second round, again, assuming that Houston's able to win in the first round, I think you get potentially a little bit of a whiplash effect. Because like you said, you play this Northern Kentucky team that doesn't have a lot of size. That's going to just be really, really heavily dependent on the guards. And then you go play an Auburn team that's got a couple of pretty talented forwards in Johnny Broome and Jalen Williams. Or you could face an Iowa team that's got some forwards, Chris Murray, Philip Rebraca, Patrick McCaffrey. Auburn obviously mentioned a couple of the shorter guards, but they got another 6'6 guard in Alan Flanagan, who's a double-digit scorer. Iowa's got a long guard, 6'7 guard in Peyton Sanford, who's a double-digit scorer. So that is one of the things that worries me about that potential second-round matchup is you go from facing another Kentucky team with not a lot of size to all of a sudden some teams with some talented big men, and that's going to be. You go from game one maybe asking your forwards to go out and dominate a team that maybe is not going to have enough size to keep up with them to all of a sudden being in a tougher second-round matchup where it's more of trying to battle something maybe closer to a draw so that your guards can hopefully kind of take over and win games for you.
And another kind of weirdly hot and cold team, Dustin, the other potential matchup, again, LBNKU, if we get past the 16 seed Northern Kentucky Norris, the Iowa Hawkeyes, one of the... I would guess, I didn't have the time to do the research, but I will if we end up seeing them in the round of 32. One of the most extreme splits in all of Division I for offensive efficiency, where they are third in the country, and defensive efficiency, where they are 167th. It is remarkable to me, and I guess kind of explains how you can be a team like the Hawkeyes this year to not just beat Iowa State. Iowa State was a good team this year, but saying you beat Iowa State, oh my god, Iowa State's good, but it's not like a rarefied air kind of team. But Iowa State was a very good defensive team this year, and Iowa just put up a ton of points on them. Put up a ton of points on Iowa State in a way that I don't feel like a lot of teams did this year. But they also lost to Eastern Illinois. They also lost to a Nebraska team that this year and perpetually is kind of a cellar dweller in the Big Ten twice. They ended their regular season losing at home to Nebraska, and yet they're here because they have some absolutely sparkling wins on their resume, and that because they're this team with this unbelievably high ceiling offensively, that they're good at putting the ball in the basket, extremely good at not turning the ball over, and they have a lot of length and high-level scorers. I think none more so than Chris Murray, brother of Keegan Murray, one of the better stories of all of last season, certainly one of the better scorers in the country in the last season. I think he's definitely picked up where his brother left off. A good volume guy, but also I think relatively efficient. You don't see the combination of usage rate and I think efficiency that often. I think that's one of those things that makes Chris Murray I think quite good, quite difficult, a very efficient scorer inside the paint, but also somebody who you're gonna have to respect his ability on the perimeter is a 6'8 guy. So I would expect a decent amount of Chris Murray versus Jairus Walker, certainly a torture test for the uber-talented Cougar freshman there. But a very interesting and wild opponent, Dustin. I think there are very few teams that had, I think, a consensus tournament resume that were as all over the map as the Hawkeyes were.
Yeah, they are definitely a tough team, and you mentioned some of the guys there. Chris Murray, averaging 20 points and 8 boards a game, certainly a really, really intriguing potential matchup for Jairus Walker in the second round there. But I think the thing that jumps out at me, kind of like you said, they're number 3 in offensive efficiency according to KenPom, but they're outside of the top 100 in terms of effective field goal percentage. So they're an above average team at actually putting the ball in the basket, but it's more about, like you mentioned, they're elite at holding onto the ball, very good offensive rebounding team. They get to the line a little bit more than average. You look at their shooters and it's like, oh yeah, they're gonna have, you know, some guys that can bomb from the outside. No, like, no one shoots better than, like, every shooter they have is like 33-36% from the outside. So no, like, great shooters, but a whole lot of capable shooters. Just very few guys on this roster that are not threats to let it go from outside. And you don't have any 40% just complete dead eye guys, but a lot of guys that you have to take seriously. So it's going to be a team that you have to be able to play out there on the perimeter with them and get a hand up and not let them get those threes, because they just got a ton of capable scorers, like you mentioned. On the other end, it's a little bit weird seeing a team that is as comfortably in the field as Iowa, you know, a top 40 team nationally, and then you look at, like, their offensive and defensive effective field goal percent, and opponents are, you know, by like a percent and a half comfortably shooting, you know, as comfortably a better effective field goal percentage than Iowa. But you look at some of kind of the secondary stats there, and you see why, because they're, you know, elite at holding onto the ball. You know, decent at turning opponents over, but, you know, enough of a margin there that they're comfortably in the positive in terms of turnovers. Really good offensive rebounding team, you know, kind of a middling defensive rebounding team, but kind of same deal where it's enough that of a margin that it's benefiting them on the whole. So it is kind of that Houston thing where it's going to be, they're a team that's going to be really hard for Houston to just get a ton of extra possessions against, because they hold on to the ball so well, because they're a very strong rebounding team with a ton of size. They're, top 30 in terms of average height in the country. So a team with a lot of height, a lot of length, a team that can really bother you. So this is, like I said, they've been successful despite not really winning the shooting percentage matchup on the year. But, you know, that's kind of been Houston's thing, you know, a lot of times too, is winning despite not always outshooting your opponent. So I think that is kind of the threat that Iowa gives you, is that they're going to make you outshoot them. It's definitely possible to outshoot them, but they're probably going to make you outshoot them to win that game.
They're going to make you play a game that maybe U of H isn't used to or super comfortable playing, even though this is, as we've said, I think, a few times, the highest ceiling offensive team that Samson has had here by a pretty wide margin. It's just so remarkable, not to belabor this point, but that this team, who had, I think, unimpeachable tournament resume, is in the bottom 20, well within the bottom 20% nationally in both opponent 2-point and 3-point field goal percentage, that you could be so below average at keeping opponents from putting the ball in the basket at a decent percentage, and yet to still found a way to win as many games as the Hawkeyes did, and to win as many quality games as they did to get this far. I think it still speaks to an opponent that, for all their warts, and we've, I think, talked a decent amount about their warts at this point, is still not going to be an easy out if the Cougars can get there.
And then if the Cougars are fortunate enough to move on past the first weekend, their four potential Sweet 16 opponents would be 4-seed Indiana, 5-seed Miami of Florida, 12-seed Drake, 13-seed Kent State, a team that the Cougar fans, I'm sure, very much remember for the very excruciatingly low scoring game that those two teams played in non-conference play. And here's kind of where, as much as I'm complaining about the bracket somewhat, you know, it, I think it is notable that, you know, Indiana and Miami of Florida both look a little bit overseeded according to KenPom. If, you know, again, not everyone, relies on KenPom as a Bible the way that maybe Sam and I do. But according to KenPom, if Houston keeps winning, they will make it to the Elite Eight before they would finally then have to likely face a top 25 team, because there are none of those in between them and the Elite Eight, with Indiana and Miami both being seeded a little bit lower. Indiana number 30, Miami number 40. Miami of 40, number Florida, or something like that. But definitely an intriguing matchup. I think the one that jumps out to me is the potential for Houston and Indiana to face off in the Sweet 16. Of course, Indiana being the last Division I college coaching job of Kelvin Sampson before he came to Houston, and obviously the way that Hoosier fans feel about Kelvin Sampson is well documented, and that they are weirdly enough not a big fan of the guy. Yeah,
I've never seen an Indiana fan online be very very overholding a 15-year grudge. Certainly have never seen that.
First year hearing of it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, really intriguing Indiana team. Trace Jackson Davis for them, one of the, you know, I think player of the year candidates in the country. Really, really uber talented forward, can just kind of do everything. Someone that would certainly be the main focal point, to say the least, of Houston's matchup should they face them. Them being the Sooners then. And then if you face Miami, maybe kind of a lesser version of Iowa with a team that is currently the KenPom number 12 offense, number 132 defense. So another team that you know, is going to really put a lot of points in the basket and make you kind of outscore them in order to stay in front of them. So some intriguing matchups down the line. And then, man, you look further, a little bit further down the bracket, I think, you know, again, a lot of things have to happen because, oh man, you're looking past so many games to think about it. But you look at that bottom half of the bracket at the number two team in Houston's regional. The number two seed is the UT Austin Longhorns. And just, again, like, a lot of things have to happen. The majority of brackets, as much as it's probably the most common outcome, the majority of brackets do not end up seeing one versus two playing for the spot in the Final Four. But if that were to happen, U of H versus UT Austin for a Final Four matchup would be the kind of instant classic that, regardless of result, I think you could go ahead and permanently etch it on the brain of every Cougar fan going forward in terms of they're going to remember exactly how that game played out, exactly what happened. But yeah, man, you want to talk about the potential for some drama. You know, you get Northern Kentucky in the first round, then you could potentially face Auburn in a essentially true road game in the second round, Indiana in the Kelvin Sampson angle in the Sweet 16, UT Austin and the Longhorns in the Elite Eight. Man, just, again, you can't overlook anybody, you know. Better team, you know, as good a teams as Houston have fallen in the first round. It happens all the time. That's why it's called March Madness. But it is really hard not to look ahead at some of the potential matchups that could come into play and go, man, there's just the potential for so much drama in this Midwest region.
Yeah, it's a bracket not short on teams that could beat you. It's also a bracket not short on narratives. I think you've pretty well laid out there. I think what's going to be interesting to watch with Miami, one of your potential Sweet 16 opponents there, Norchad Omier, one of the better rebounding and better efficiency scoring big men in the country. Certainly one of the better, I think, portal additions, had joined the Hurricanes after a successful career at some not very good Arkansas State teams prior. It's a very guard-heavy Miami team, but you take Norchad Omier out of that, I think it might be a bit more difficult. And certainly, I think Drake themselves won't be an easy game. We see so often teams of Drake's profile just cause absolute, I believe, mayhem. It's March Mayhem, but no, like that kind of like Missouri Valley team that won a lot of games and maybe a not super highly rated conference, but a team that just ran through a difficult conference tournament, good defensive team. I think obviously talked plenty about Miami, and Indiana here as potential later round opponents, but obviously you always see a 12 or a 13 seed, kind of, you know, make that second weekend. It's like, oh wow, like Drake was the team this year. I think Drake was a team and then not super super far past that just wrecked some higher seed teams weekend. So certainly not counting out the Bulldogs there either, but obviously got done talking a bit earlier about the Cougars road here, not the easiest time the Cougars are gonna have, even getting potentially Indiana or Miami or Drake. And obviously, oh, the thought of playing the Longhorns, I almost don't want to entertain it out loud so as to feel like I'm speaking it out of existence, because that would be a that would be quite the matchup. That would be quite the game in terms of this, not just men's basketball program story history, but just Houston Cougar athletics generally. Because we're not going to be getting too many of those with the Longhorns, really, regardless of sport, here in the next decade or two once they cease being a conference mate.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Houston, we're as Houston fans saying, hey, let's not overlook the early round matchups. But that goes for a lot of the other teams we're talking about here, too. I mean, Indiana, We know how Kent State, how dangerous Kent State can be from having faced them. You know, that's a team that if I'm an Indiana fan, I'm sweating them out in the first round for as good as they've looked. Miami certainly shouldn't be overlooking Drake if they know it's good for them. And even the Longhorns, we're talking about them as the number two seed. You know, I doubt they'll have trouble with Colgate in the first round, but man, you're talking about some potentially spicy, spicy matchups. The seventh seed in this regional is Texas A&M, a team that closed the season, like the Longhorns, very, very hot. So, you know, if they're able to get past Penn State, who themselves made was making a pretty nice run in the Big Ten tournament. If A&M is able to get past Penn State in that first round to have the UT Austin versus A&M second round matchup, where you know two teams that just closed the season pretty insanely hot facing each other. You know, I guess the knowledge that at least one of those teams, Sam, has to go out in the first weekend is maybe the silver lining to draw there, but. You know, looking up and down this bracket should be a lot of fun. Just, you know, no lack of potential for upsets, I don't think. You know, I don't know. Overall, as much as I got done saying how you almost can't look ahead and get too excited about a one versus two. I don't know. I think this may be the region where the one and the two, there's the biggest gap between the one and two and the rest of the field. I feel like the three and four, kind of like I mentioned, Xavier here, I think is a decent team, but would be, they're again, they're 16, so another team that's kind of overseeded if you believe Ken Pom. So really intriguing bracket, and excited to get into it on Thursday, and hopefully we have multiple other rounds of Cougar action to be coming back and previewing here in the future.
I'm like counting the minutes to the 16-on-16 Tuesday first four game, Dustin. That's how excited I am for the madness to begin here. It just can't get here soon enough. Really, really excited to see what this Cougar team that I think for a great recent history of Cougar men's basketball, and obviously a great season and a great team, can be felled via 40 minutes of not so great basketball in this tournament. But I think really, really exciting to see what this team can do in a situation where this program has been quite often the last several years and has done quite well for itself.
As I said, the only other thing I did kind of want to mention on the way out, kind of forgot to mention maybe a little up top, but you know, the biggest X factor obviously hanging over this whole Houston NCAA tournament experience that we're talking about here is, you know, how close to 100% is Marcus Sasser going to be? And certainly he gave a quote saying to Joseph Duarte that he expects to be 100% by Thursday. And, you know, I very much have very little reason to doubt that, given that, you know, it very much felt like with the AAC championship versus Memphis today, very much felt like had that been an NCAA tournament game that Marcus Sasser would have played. So I think the fact that he didn't play was indicative of what, you know, the relative level of importance of that game versus Houston already having the one seed locked up in the NCAA tournament. And certainly, absolutely, if you're not 1,000% sure that he's healthy and not going to re-injure anything, you hold him out of that game because just, you know, yeah, it would have been nice to beat Memphis again, but ultimately not what anyone's going to remember about the season going forward. So obviously, don't expect him to be less than 100%. I it didn't look like a serious enough injury that you'd think that by Thursday it's still going to be really bothering him. But I think until we see Marcus get out there and kind of look like his normal self against Northern Kentucky, it is going to be something that's a little bit in the back of my mind and a little bit, you know, something that I'm holding my breath over is just, you know, what we're going to see from him, because certainly, you know, no one deserves, I don't think, a healthy NCAA tournament run more than Marcus does at this point.
Yeah, and I fully agree with you. I don't think that there's any indication of Marcus Sasser's health or lack of health by not playing today. I'll go so far as to say, to me, it felt a lot like the Bama game earlier this season, though the Bama game earlier this season didn't have necessarily tournament, I guess, implications. But as we saw with the actual seeding here, I don't think the Cougars lost anything by losing today against Memphis. And yeah, I take him at his word that he's good to go, but hamstring injuries can be kind of finicky. It's something that even the normal recovery time doesn't necessarily guarantee that it's not going to maybe pop its head up and pop its head up at a time where you really don't want its head to pop up at, so to speak. So obviously happy that the injury in the AAC semis against Cincy isn't more serious, but groin injuries are tricky, and certainly now is not the time of year you'd be wanting to deal with that, even if I still have a pretty good amount of confidence that he'll be in good shape, I think, against Northern Kentucky. But you just wonder when that's going to maybe potentially rear its head again if you aspire to be playing a few games in this tournament. At least a few games, excuse me.
Yeah, hope six is kind of the number of games I'm hoping to be playing in this tournament. You know, if it's up to me, that is the number I would prefer. But certainly, yeah, we'll see how it goes. And very much excited for all the madness to start on Tuesday with the play-in game. Sorry, not the play-in game. The first four games, they're play-in games. I think we can be honest about that. And then the Cougs helping open up. I haven't seen a time yet on Thursday. Have you seen, Sam, a tip-off time?
It's the time that you are going to be like, ugh, and I'm going to be like, yes, because it is 8:20 Central Time on TNT.
Okay, you know what? I'm cool with that. As long as it's, you know, I was just worried we were going to get an 11 a.m. game and I was going to have to go beg, plead, and borrow with someone at work to get off on time to see that whole game. But 8:20 on Thursday, I'm okay with that one for sure. All right, Sam, any final thoughts about this this field of 68 before we wrap this episode up?
No, I think we covered it. I just can't wait for the madness to begin.
All right. Well, on our way out, as always, going to encourage you, if you enjoy the Scott Holman podcast, you enjoy the work we do, patreon.com/shpodcast, patreon.com/shpodcast. For a mere $5 a month, you can sign up to support Sam and I and the work that we do week in and week out covering the Cougars. You can also get access to our now regular bonus episodes that we're putting out with some bonus extra content. So if you enjoy what we do, you want to get some more Cougar action in your earballs, you want to throw some money our way to help support us, would love for you to go patreon.com/shpodcast and sign up over there. You can also get in contact with us by emailing us shpodcast@gmail.com or tweeting at us at shpodcast. That's it for us. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. No cap. No cap.